Now, moving on, more than 50,000 construction workers are urgently needed to fill what's being described as a black hole in the workforce if the government is to meet targets aimed at tackling the housing crisis. An unpublished report has identified a significant lack of electricians, plumbers, painters and bricklayers. These workers will be required to construct a promised 33,000 homes a year by 2030, while also meeting the government's retrofitting targets. Director of Housing and Planning with the Construction Industry Federation is James Benson, and he joins us now. James, good morning.
Good morning, Owen. Thanks for the invitation.
50,000 workers needed to tackle this housing crisis. Is that possible?
It is possible, Owen, and I suppose one thing worth noting at the very outset, the target of 33,000 homes is an annual average figure that has been set out in Housing for All. It's not likely that that figure will be hit this year or next year. And in fact, the target of 33,000 homes isn't anticipated to be reached until about 24, 25. So while the 50,000 workers and approximately 27,000 of those are expected to be needed in residential delivery, it's not likely that they won't all be needed for a number of years just yet. And even looking now, I suppose the other side of that, we need to look at where we are currently. Those are the target figures, Owen. Currently, last year, we delivered just 20,000 homes. Now, I would argue that is an undersupply of where we need to be, because when you look at population growth and demand, and there's a very large pent-up demand, as many of your listeners will know, we haven't delivered. So there's an underprovision. In tandem with that, we have recently seen the census carried out. That information will become available in the next number of months. And there is a national planning framework review also due to happen during the summer. So in fact, while that 33,000 figure is the current target, that could actually grow beyond that when you take into account the underprovision over the last number of years. And if we see that the census information reveals that we need more homes and there was a mismatch of previous figures. So that figure could grow. I would say that there is a number of positive things happening in constructions and apprenticeships, and I could go through those. And also there's definitely more that could be done. And on those positives, apprenticeship rates now this year are at approximately 8,000, and that's across all construction. That is the highest since the mid-2000s, so we are seeing a turn back to those that are coming into construction. And again, that figure is on a positive trajectory for this year. There is another campaign, Generation Apprenticeship, that people might be aware of. This is promoted and set out by Minister Humphreys and Mr Harris, and it promotes apprenticeships, not just in construction, but wider apprenticeships. And the theme there is acceptance and attractiveness, and that's something that we haven't seen in the past. An apprenticeship is just another way of learning, but we haven't seen the same level of appreciation for the good living that can be made in construction.
Okay, let's stop there, James, and stay on the issue of apprenticeships, because this report, it's unpublished, as I said. It's by the training agency Sullis, and it highlights major gaps throughout the apprenticeship system that will need to be filled over the next 8 years. So it includes a demand for 7,000 electricians, 7,300 carpenters, 7,000 plumbers, 3,500 plasterers, 4,500 painters, decorators, 1,800 bricklayers by 2030, and the new figures also show the need for 1,500 roofers and tilers, 4,500 insulation installers, and 1,800 glazers, window fabricators and fitters also required. So in total, 51,691 construction workers. If we only have 8,000 people in apprenticeships now, how is that not well short of what's required?
It is, but this problem can't be fixed just in a 6 or 12 month period. It is going to have to happen in various stages.
So how do we incentivise people then to take up apprenticeships?
Yeah, I think there's a number. While there's positive things happening on, there is a number of other areas that we do need to look at and take advantage of. Our work permit system currently, at the moment, anyone outside of the EU will take 16 weeks for their work permit to be processed. So they're just not going to come in. No one can afford to come into the country, seek accommodation, pay rent or whatever the case may be, and wait 16 weeks for their work permit to be processed. So that needs to be looked at and that needs to be streamlined. I think we need to make better use of our live register at the moment. There's definitely people that are on the live register that would be capable and wish to get into trade. So there's probably an element of training that might be needed, but we should look at the live register. We definitely have to look at attracting back in those that have left in the mid-2000s, but also as recently as last year, the year before. Unfortunately, with COVID, residential and construction were shut down for a number of months. Those many people who had to support their own families had to leave during that time. They took up contracts that might have lasted 12 months, 24 months. They need to be attracted. So the situation needs to be made for attractive for them to come back into the country once they've fulfilled their contractual obligations. But I think a key point on is our apprenticeship model. currently that lasts about 4 years, and there's a number of different pay remunerations during that period. You get 33% in year one, goes to 50% in year two, and then you ultimately get to your craft rate, which is a good rate. It's €21 an hour, so substantially more than your minimum wage rate or your average living rate, which is around €12. However, the trainee model is a very good alternative model that could be used in conjunction with the apprenticeship. So the apprenticeship is 4 years plus. The trainee model would put people into trades. It would be a combination of work placement and also classroom style learning, and that would give people an opportunity that they can go on to the traineeships, they can get their trades, they can get their skill within potentially 18 months, and they will also have that work placement piece during that time where they can demonstrate to potential employers of their worth, and those employers are crying out for the various requirements. So that's a very, very good area that we should be looking at putting more emphasis in, I believe, the traineeship model in conjunction with the apprenticeship model.
Yeah, there's also centres to be used, I think you touched on that as well, to upskill thousands of workers who will help the government achieve their aim of retrofitting 500,000 homes by 2030. We talked about how we can incentivise people to go into an apprenticeship, but are incentives there for employers to take on apprentices?
Well, I think certainty, as with most things within construction, certainty and efficiency are two key elements. So certainty needs to be there. Thankfully, with the retrofitting plan, with the launch of Housing for All on 2nd September last year, we saw a number of billions committed to each of those areas. And with that commitment of funding, we can see certainty. So we're not going to be at a stage where we're looking for, you know, small cycles of window when there's going to be highs and lows within the construction industry. So I think that committed funding will go a long way to provide certainty to the employers that they can upskill, they can invest in the equipment that they might need to take on these projects, the likes of these retrofitting projects, and then they will have the confidence to take on the employees to carry out that work. So I think we're uniquely in a position that the funding has been made available to those within the industry and to the industry and to the wider economy to ensure that we don't have any, what you call it, fallback that we would have had in the past. So that's a very strong positive. And I think we will see a greater level of those come into the industry as a result of that. I think we've all been very guilty in the past, and I think we, those even within the industry, to talk down the attractiveness of the industry. But there's, as I say, there's quite a good, enjoyable, and there's a good wage to be made in construction. And another unique thing I think I would like to set out on is that the opportunities within construction are very unique. People can come in, often they come in, they enter in the trades, and they make their way through, even right up in the senior management in many companies. So there's huge opportunities once you do get into construction that just aren't always there in some of the other sectors and some of the other parts of our economy.
Yeah, I note as well that Higher Education Minister Simon Harris is quoted here in an article in The Independent as saying a very narrow and sometimes elitist view of third level education has deterred school leavers from taking up apprenticeships. He's also encouraging people, young people that are doing their leaving cert, to consider apprenticeships when filling out their CAO forms as they approach the exams as well. That article can be read in full on The Independent, and as I said, it's an unpublished report by training agency Sullis. Just before we finish up, James, just to take a look at, I suppose, the housing industry at the moment in general, where we are. We're still quite behind, I would say, the targets at the moment, but there is quite a lot of pent-up demand there too.
Oh, a huge amount, and labour is one of the issues in which we put members up and down the country every day on this. And while labour is a concern, it's not the biggest impediment to delivery at the moment on material availability and inflation rates for abnormal levels that we haven't seen for any number of years. That is a major challenge at the moment. But nationally and very locally for Kildare and the surrounds, planning and the availability of service zone lands, they are the key impediments at the moment that we are seeing for delivery. Unfortunately, in the 12 months just up on last 12 months up until about March of this year, we only saw 2,000 units delivered in Kildare. As I said, there's a far greater pent-up demand within Kildare for more units than that, and across a number of tenure models, whether it be rental, private, social and affordable. So we need to deliver more. But we are seeing a scarcity of land, and importantly, we're seeing a scarcity of service zone land. So the key infrastructure, the roads, the water, the power, and they're where the blockages are currently in the system, and we need to get through those blockages as soon as possible.
All right, on that note, and indeed that report that we were talking about, more than 50,000 construction workers needed to fill a black hole in the workforce if the government is meet the targets aimed at tackling the housing crisis. James Benson, Director of Housing and Planning with the Construction Industry Federation. Thanks, James.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare KFM.
Time now to open the lines for our competition on the programme, and Air Grid, developer of the Kildare Meath grid upgrade and proud sponsors of the Under 20 All-Ireland Football Championship, is giving listeners the chance to win tickets to the All-Ireland Football Final between Kildare and Tyrone tomorrow. Ticket prices are €25 per adult, €20 for senior citizens and €5 for under 16s. So if you're going to the match, you could be the winner of a pair of tickets worth €50, and we have a pair of those tickets to give away before the 11 o'clock news. All you have to do is text or WhatsApp the answer to this following question with your name and where you're from to 0833 97 97 97. Name the team manager or the captain of the Kildare under 20 football team. So we'll take the answer of either the manager or the captain, it doesn't matter, and send that into us 0833 97 97 97 on the text or the WhatsApp, and we will announce the winner before 11.
Now, Biodiversity Week kicks off tomorrow, the 14th of May, and it's running until Sunday, the 22nd of May. I have Kildare Heritage Officer Bridget Loughlin on the line. Good morning, Bridget.
Good morning, Ciara. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. Now, I know you're going to be joining us here on Kildare Today next week, every morning, you know, going through the events that are happening on a daily basis. So, of course, we will start with tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday, because tomorrow is the first day of Biodiversity Week. And before you get into the day's events, what exactly is Biodiversity Week?
Okay, Biodiversity Week is it's an Irish initiative. There's a European initiative, Biodiversity Day, which is generally the 22nd of May. But in Ireland, we like to extend things as long as we possibly can. So in Kildare, we have it for the whole week, running from the 13th of May to the 22nd of May. Nice to get into weekends. Now, the purpose behind it is to encourage people to go out and explore their wild areas. So to engage with biodiversity groups in their county, like in Kildare we have the Kildare Bird Group, we have the Kildare Bat Group, and we have a number of other organisations that are dedicated to the promotion and the protection of biodiversity. So it's a chance to go out and get involved with those groups and to learn a little bit about the biodiversity in your area.
Now, you mentioned the Bat Group there. What is that, Bridget?
The Bat Group, it's Kildare Bat Group, and they're in existence, I'd say, probably 7 or 8 years now at this stage. And basically what they do is they manage a number of surveys that we carry out in the county, one of them being our Darbenton survey, which is where we survey for a particular type of bat that occurs on waterways. They also survey for a number of bats, but what they're really about is getting people excited about bats, explaining what bats are about, demystifying bats, and like, I suppose dispelling some of the myths it's about, you know, exist around bats that they fly into women's hairs and they suck your blood and all.
Wait,
of that.
Wait, so is that a myth? They don't fly
That's
into.
That's very much a myth. A bat is an extremely dynamic.
I mean about the hair thing in particular.
Yes,
I've heard that one.
Extremely dynamic aerial flyer, okay?
Okay?
So if a bat comes close to you, they're not more interested in your hair than the man on the moon, but what they are interested in is the insects that might be attracted to your hair. Okay, so what a bat is doing is it's out feeding insects. They're effectively Ireland's hoovers, in that they hoover up to 3,000 insects a night. Okay, so they're out flying around gathering up the insects. So if they come close to you, which they won't, they're looking for insects, and they are capable of incredible manoeuvrability. In fact, some of the jet fighters and that are based on the ability of bats to move in the air. So they're not interested in women's hair. The only way they might become entangled is if you start trying to...
I have to say, Bridget, I once was nearly attacked by a bat, and it has left me a little bit frightened ever since. And I did hear that before about the bats in the hair. But now you've dispelled that myth. It's gone. It's Friday the 13th, so people do not need to worry about that. The bats will not be flying into your hair.
They don't eat your blood.
Okay, well, good. Good to know. And obviously with tomorrow being the first day of Biodiversity Week, there's going to be a dawn chorus. That's a Castletown House.
Yeah, I think it's actually great that we're kicking off with a dawn chorus. Nice and early in the morning. So any of you that are interested are up at 4:30 in the morning, pop down to Castletown House, and the Kildare Birdwatch Group are going to host a dawn chorus. And what a dawn chorus basically is, you get up really early, you go down to a park and listen to the birds singing, and somebody there will tell you what you're hearing. And it's absolutely, I don't know if you've ever been up at that hour of the morning in May or June, it's absolutely amazing.
Very peaceful, isn't it? Yeah.
It's very peaceful. It's just very engaging because all of these sounds, and there's a real sense of nature being awake when everybody else is asleep. So that's happening in Castletown, and they're meeting in the car park, in the car park off the M6,
yes.
off the M4.
M4, yeah.
And it's a great morning. Then you can go for your breakfast afterwards.
Very good. We always want a bit of breakfast after that. I have to say, waking up really early and feeling like everybody else is still behind you and asleep, there is, you kind of get a kick out of it. I like it.
There is that. But having said that, if getting up early is not your thing, they're also hosting a dusk walk later on in the week, but we'll talk about that later on.
Very good. Okay. Yeah. You will, you'll fill us in on that, of course, yeah, next week. You're going to be on every day. But tomorrow as well, there's a day of action. That's on Lullymore West Bog.
Yes, Lullymore. So the IPCC have a bog of their own, and that's Lullymore. So they're having a day where people can go down and engage with the activities that they're doing there. So they're looking at the family-free day, so they're encouraging people to bring their kids, and there's lots of different activities going to happen down on the bog, all related to bogs and bog biodiversity and pollinators and all sorts of things. They always put on a good show. And that's starting at 11 o'clock on Saturday morning. So if the parents have nothing planned for the kids tomorrow, take them down to Lullymore. And it's in Lullymore West Bog. So you'll start off in the IPCC Centre, the Nature Centre there, and you can go down to the bog. It's just down the road.
Okay, Bridget, you are going to be joining us all next week. Of course, yes. You're the Kildare Heritage Officer, so we look forward to speaking with you then. And thank you for coming on. I just want to remind our listeners what is happening tomorrow. I'm going to go through the event listing for tomorrow, which is Saturday the 14th of May. So the Dawn Chorus, as Bridget pointed out, is at Castletown House in Parklands. It begins at 4:30. So 4:30, just exit 6 off the M4. Then at 11 a.m, a day of action on Lullymore West Bog. That's at the Bog of Allen Nature Centre. And then at 9:30 p.m, the Bat Walk and Talk in Kilcock. And people, do not be worried, because the bats will be coming nowhere near your hair. That is absolute myth. And Friday the 13th will be over, so we won't be superstitious anyway. Thank you so much, Bridget. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you so much, Ciara. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks indeed to Bridget. Looking forward to hearing all about those events set next week as well on the programme. Now, just a reminder, get your texts coming in to us for our competition on the programme this morning, announcing the winner before 11 if you want a pair of tickets for the Airgrid Under-20 Football Championship All-Ireland Final between Kildare and Tyrone tomorrow in Park Sean McDiarmada in Carrick-on-Shannon. All you have to do is tell us who is the Kildare Under-20 Football Manager or the Kildare Under-20 Football Captain, and send that in to 0833 97 97 97.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Welcome back to the programme. Now, very shortly, we'll be going to the sports editor of the Leinster Leader, Tommy Callaghan, to look ahead to a very busy weekend for Kildare GAA teams. But sticking with local issues, and Green Party councillor on the Naas Municipal District, Colin Kenny, joins me now to look at motions and issues that he brought forward to the recent Naas MD meeting. Morning, Colin. Welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much, Owen. Good to talk to you this morning.
Now, the first motion that you had was to ask the council to examine the feasibility of time-dependent multifunctional loading bays on the main streets in the Naas MD, allowing for shop deliveries in the mornings, drop-off and collection points for music lessons, grinds or classes in the afternoon and evenings. Is this something to do with maybe traffic congestion, Colm?
Absolutely, Owen. It was brought to my attention there that parking bays in the town, that if we could encourage maybe throughput at certain points, and particularly there around Market Square. The specific example that was given to me was that there was maybe young children bringing musical instruments to grinds or to music classes, and if to facilitate that, you know, parents, whatever, dropping them off could stop off just for a short time, and there will be high turnover in this area. And then this multifunctional idea that these, you know, in the mornings, these same parking bays could be for loading and unloading of goods, and maybe then in the evening at night they would revert maybe to taxi rank parking. So again, just this idea of higher throughput and freeing up spaces.
What was the response that you got from the council then, Colin?
Yeah, so they said they would they would certainly consider it, but it would be tied into the ongoing area of the Naas parking bylaws, which are coming up for review. And also there's a review of the taxi bylaws, which will also be carried out in Naas going forward.
All right. Second question then. You wanted the council to confirm if it plans to promote repair and upcycling cafes for all goods, especially electric and electronic goods and bicycles, as part of a community project like the farmers market in the potato market. What's this about?
Look, I mean, we're maybe used to, wee goods, electric and electronic recycling, that, we drop off white goods to maybe some of the, where these were originally bought from, fridges and freezers and kettles, bicycles, we just dropped them off. But like the circular economy, and we had Minister Oisin Smith there in Naas a couple of weeks ago with the reverse vending machine, that if we get to a point where instead of just disposing of goods, that we were repairing them, instead of sending them direct for recycling, that we were actually fixing them at first point, that people had a point to bring some of the goods back, especially bicycles, that could be fixed up, repaired, upcycled, and put back into use. So specifically, I just thought that this, in conjunction with that area there, the upgrade of the farmers market at the potato market, just off Market Square in the centre of town, if this concept could be included too. So the answer that I got there was that, going forward, at the moment the priority is to secure the potato market and get the farmers market up and running. But yeah, certainly going forward, it could be considered at a future stage.
And just finally then, Colin, we would have highlighted on the programme the great work that the Zero Waste Community Garden in Rathcoffey does, and Pat Pender and all the gang there. And I know you had a similar question then to the Naas MD, wanting the council to confirm if it plans to develop a community garden. And that would be, you're suggesting, in the northwest quadrant at the Canal Harbour. So just explain, first of all, what you would envisage that this garden would look like and its function.
Yeah, so no, just in that particular location, I mean, it's quite central, that area, the whole northwest quadrant of Naas, it hasn't been developed as such, and that would be quite a central point just off the around the Canal Harbour area. And I'm thinking particularly of accessibility for people, that people could walk to it and get to it quite easily. But the bigger picture, Owen, I suppose, on the idea of community gardens, I mean, we're more aware now that, unfortunately, with the war in Ukraine, and there is a suggestion and pressure on there from Minister Conlogue that, we have to become more aware of being self-sustainable in food production, that we can't be relying on getting wheat, barley, grain from Eastern Europe, from the Ukraine, from Russia. So just to promote the concept that we're growing at home, growing ourselves at home, and just to bring that into people's mindset. So look, I mean, the reply I got on that was that as part of the Naas local area plan, a master plan would be prepared for the northwest quadrant through the consultation process. People will be able to feed into with suggestions like that. Now, the Parks Department did come back and say at the moment there was no resources to actually develop this, but I'd like to think in the long term going forward that it would be considered with the master plan.
Okay, and also just briefly before we let you go, Colin, one final motion that you had, the council, you wanted them to delineate lanes on all roundabouts with road markings in the municipal district, especially those which have two lanes at entrance and egress or exit. And the report there was that the Naas Municipal District Office will assess the proposal in conjunction with the roads design and sustainable transportation teams. Happy enough with that response?
Yeah, thanks for spotting that on. Look, this is on my social media. I have promoted. I'm now cycling to Kildare County Council meetings in Newbridge, and we've an upcoming meeting in Maynooth. And roundabouts, in particular, are not cycle friendly. And just in general, even for other vehicles, other traffic users on the South Ring Road here in Naas and on the Millennium Road, some of those roundabouts they're not marked, they're not delineated, and people maybe aren't fully, let the drivers be fully aware of what lanes they're in or where they're entering and exiting. So that was based on that motion. And yes, I'm happy that they will consider it.
Okay, Green Party councillor on the Naas Municipal District, Colm Kenny. Thanks for that, Colm.
Thanks, Owen. Thank you.
Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare today on 0833 97 97 97. KFM.
Indeed, and let's get to some of the messages then. Can you please wish all of the Kildare Irish figure dancers from Drogheda, Brownstown, Skerries and Kilmeade classes the very best of luck at their first FESH back since COVID started. The FESH is taking place in St. Lawrence's GAA at 12 noon this coming Sunday. Great excitement is building up from all the class dancers, teachers and committee members. Irish figure dancing is a tradition around Kildare that we pride ourselves in keeping alive through a fun, all-inclusive, affordable approach to the young people of Kildare, and they are 100% run voluntarily. And that's Caroline Morrissey, Drogheda Irish Figure Dancing Class. So the very best of luck to all involved there. And also, can we say a big well done to Linda Delaney in Allan Wood. You've won yourself a pair of tickets for Kildare against Tyrone in the All-Ireland Football Final tomorrow afternoon, or tomorrow evening in Carrick-on-Shannon. And Linda, if you could just send me a WhatsApp with your email address. The tickets are on an email link, so we will email those to you. And on that note, let's go to Tommy Callaghan, sports editor with the Leinster Leader. Morning, Tommy.
Morning, all.
I said it this morning, I don't recall such a busy weekend, ever having a busier weekend in terms of Kildare teams out in action, or indeed a more successful weekend that we could be looking forward to. It's great.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. It's a very, very, the fixture schedule is very cramped at the minute. Very, very cramped, as a matter of fact. I mean, you wouldn't really, it doesn't feel like there's a Leinster Senior Football Championship semi-final on Sunday. It certainly doesn't feel like there's an All-Ireland Under-20 final on tomorrow. The ladies are in the Leinster final on Sunday. The Camogie girls are in the Leinster final. Christy Ring boys are playing their final round in the Christy Ring on tomorrow. I don't know, it's too cramped, and I think the GAA are suffering because of it.
Yeah, it is very, very busy. But as we said, look, it's great to have so many teams in finals and doing so well. If we start off with the under-20s, they face Tyrone in the All-Ireland final tomorrow evening, 5 o'clock. They had a tough Leinster campaign, Tommy, but they got through it very well.
They had a very tough Leinster campaign. It stood to them. It might have stood up a little bit last week against Sligo. They looked a bit tired at times. It was a far from convincing display from the under-20s. As even their manager Shane or Brian Flanagan admitted after the match, he thought his team didn't look as fresh as he would have liked it. But the one very positive thing about them was that they stood up to the challenge, and defensively they played very well up front. They were wayward for a lot of the game. Early on, they played well. When Sligo, every team is going to have a spell at some stage, a spell of dominance. And when Sligo had their spell of dominance, Kildare stood up to them. They denied them the goal, and then that's probably how Kildare managed to book their place in tomorrow's final. Having said that, I saw the second semi-final on Sunday on TV. And I have to say, Tyrone looked very impressive. They looked overall, I thought Tyrone and Kerry was a hell of a good game of football. And Kildare are going into tomorrow underdogs. Nothing wrong with that. But they'll have to step up a hell of a lot from what they played last week.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game. I've seen that match as well between Kerry and Tyrone. Kerry were probably the better side for the majority of the game, but Tyrone just hung in there and got a goal in the last few minutes as well to snatch victory.
They hung in well, but listen, going back, and you don't want to be cribbing and crying the whole time, but I mean, you have to wonder about this match being played in Carrick and Shannon. It's an All-Ireland Under-20 All-Ireland final, and the second. After senior, your next grade is under-20, and it's scrubbed into Carrick and Shannon, and Kildare playing again on Sunday. They're seniors. You have to wonder and worry how many Kildare fans will travel. There will be a certain amount will travel, but I'm sure that match was in Croke Park, and every team wants to play in Croke Park, and especially in under-20. Remember, this is probably the biggest game that most of these lads will ever play. Now, some will definitely go on and play senior football for their county, no doubt about that, from both Tyrone and from Kildare. But the majority of them won't. This is the biggest game of their lives, probably, and it's been played in Carrick and Shannon. Doesn't make sense. If Dublin were playing the final, would it be in Carrick and Shannon? I have my doubts.
Yeah, the team was named yesterday, and it's unchanged from that team that faced Sligo in the semi-final. In goals, Cormac Barker, Kilcullen. Full-back line, Harry O'Neill, Klein, Dino Donoghue, Selbridge, Mark Maguire, Nace. Half-back line, Tommy Gill, Carberry, James McGrath, Athai, Ryan Burke, Cara. Middle of the field, Luke Killian, Salins, Brendan Gibbons, Kilcock. Half-forward line, Niall O'Regan, Selbridge, Daniel Lynham, Cara, Shane Farrell, Kilcock. And the full-forward line, Aaron Brown, Selbridge, Adam Fanning, Klein, Owen Bagnall, Alan Wood. Look, they've all performed very well, Tommy, but that forward line in particular, the likes of Adam Fanning, Owen Bagnall, Aaron Brown, Shane Farrell, they've all had great games in the last while.
Yeah, they've all had great games. The trick, I think, tomorrow is that they all bring their A game with them on the day. They've all, it's a good panel of players, very good panel of players, and each player on that panel, on that starting 15 in particular, and indeed lads coming in, they're all good footballers. They haven't all gelled together on the one day. They have all individually at different moments to play.
All right, I think we might have just lost the line there with Tommy. I don't know if you can still hear me, Tommy, but we'll give you a ring back. Kira, if you're out there, you might just give Tommy a buzz. We'll go and hear from Brian Flanagan, though, the Kildare under-20 football manager. Here's what he had to say in the lead-up to the game.
You need depth to your squad, and you know no single player is going to be brilliant every day, and there might have been lads today that, you know, be disappointed going home with their performance, but they could be the match winner next weekend, and that's the nature of it. That's been the way it has been over the last 3-4 matches. So we trust our squad, we're happy to use our bench, and like I said, they got the job done today. It wasn't pretty, but they got them. It becomes as much about planning for next Saturday and talking about and preparing in that way as it does anything you do on the pitch, and we'll make sure that the bodies and the minds are ready to go on.
Yeah, that's the manager, Brian Flanagan. Here's the captain, Selbridge's Aaron Brown.
Absolutely, absolutely. We knew once we got a win under our belt that we're going to be unstoppable. So hopefully now we follow along now in the All-Ireland final. Anybody attacking now, anywhere on the pitch, even seeing Dean scoring a point today, you know, we know that we can hurt teams any position on the field, so that's what we try to do.
Yeah, KFM will have full commentary of the match tomorrow evening with Ger McNally and Philly Wolfe in association with Home Care Solutions, Rathasker Square, Kilcullen Road in Naas, and throw in Park. Sean McDiarmidat and Carrick on Shannon is at 5 o'clock tomorrow evening. Tommy, the seniors as well, they're also in action. That's on Sunday up against Westmeath. They had a good win, probably as expected, against Louth last weekend, and Westmeath, now you'd be hoping that Kildare will book their place in the final.
They would indeed. The Queen probably, well, not probably, they go into this one as favourites, but you must remember Clare played Westmeath last year in the semi-final as well. They won by 2 points, and that match could have went either way. There was nothing in it for Clare. Actually got 2 goals in say 4 minutes in the second half, went 6 clear. Westmeath came back at them, got it back to 1, and it was a late point then. I think it was an excellent point. I think it was Shane O'Sullivan got it. Put 2 in it. Everybody is expecting Clare to win this one and win comfortably. They're playing well, played very well against Louth. They're certainly well up for this game. Glenn Ryan and his management team have these lads working really well. They're working hard. And one thing Glenn Ryan insists on is work ethic, and that seems to be that has certainly got through to the players. A hell of a good panel of players. It'll be interesting to see the team that's named, probably named tonight, but they'll go into it as favourites. But they just have to be careful that they're being, don't be looking at the final before they win their semi-final. That's the first thing, and I'm sure Glenn Ryan and the rest of his lads will have the team up for this one, looking forward to it. And then the second semi-final will be on later on, Dublin taking on Meath.
Yeah, the Kildare team last week, Tommy, you were on the programme with us last Friday. You said that you were expecting maybe some changes and some new faces coming in. The likes of Brian McLaughlin started. And can you see maybe a couple of other lads maybe getting a run out then on Sunday?
Don't expect too many changes. Possibly one in the starting 15. Derek Kervin might come back in. He came on as a sub the last day, scored 1-3. I nearly expect Darragh to be starting. The defence, I imagine, will be as is, providing everybody gets fit. Possibly one change. But if everybody is fit, I'd expect the same six to start again, and midfield, Kevin Feeney and Kevin O'Connor, I'd imagine start there again. So maybe one change up front. Apart from that, if everybody else is fit, I don't expect a change.
Yeah, Kildare going into that game then as favourites against Westmeath, throws in at 2:15 on Sunday in Croke Park, and it's followed up then by the other semi-final, as Tommy said, between Dublin and Meath, and Dublin probably going into that one, you would imagine, as favourites despite being relegated from Division 1, and I think a lot of people wouldn't be surprised to see a Kildare and Dublin final. Let's hear then from the manager Glenn Ryan. Here's what he had to say after the win against Louth.
Well, it's championship football now, and you know, it's there's fellas there to do those jobs and other fellas do other jobs, and collectively we all have to work very hard, and that's what we strive for every day, and hopefully it'll help us along. We've had a lot of meetings and a lot of discussion about trying to pick the team and trying to get what we think is our best team, and you know, when you're doing that, you're disappointing some fellas, and that's difficult, but we try and put the best team out in the pitch, and when they're out there, we hope that they all do their best and give everything that they can.
Here's the captain, Mick O'Grady.
Yeah, look, all round it was a good performance, but look, there's going to be stuff to work on going into the semi-final. We knew what, you know, Mickey Hart were prepared and well. We knew what Louth were going to bring, and in order for us to, you know, win the game, we had to make sure that the intensity was where it should be. And I suppose playing in Division 1 this year, you know, we're used to kind of maybe playing at a slightly higher pitch than what Louth were this year, and probably showed there to start the match.
Yeah, full commentary of that game on Sunday Sports Beat in association with Hanlon Concrete Products of Robertstown Kildare. Senior footballers against Westmeath. Tommy, the hurlers then, they're also playing tomorrow against Sligo. They're already into the Christy Ring Cup final, and as I mentioned to Ger McNally on Monday, they're kind of cruising through this campaign.
Yeah, they are indeed. This was expected, in fairness. Before the competition started, Kildare were hot favourites, sharp price favourites, money on favourites to win the Christy Ring this year, and you can understand why. They were very, very unfortunate in the league. They hadn't got the full squad for lots of the league due to Nate having a magnificent run in the Leinster and All Ireland Club Series. So it was well into the competition before they got going. But the main thing was there that they did retain their Division 2A status. It went down to the wire, but they maintained their status, and that was vitally important for going forward, as the manager David Hurley says all along, you have to be playing in Division 2A at the very least. So Kildare, they look the outstanding team in the Christy Ring, and if you look at the results, there's four rounds gone from Kildare's point of view, and they won them all comfortably. And then on Saturday that game now throws in at 12 o'clock tomorrow in Newbridge to take on Sligo, and I'd be more than surprised if David Hurley doesn't use that to give lads on the panel that haven't seen much game time, give them game time on tomorrow. And they'll be looking forward to David Hurley and his management team. They're really concentrating now on the Christy Ring final, where they'll play the winners of either Derry or Mayo. They play on Saturday as well. That match is in Mayo. Kildare bet Mayo early on, gave them a bit of a trimming early on, but Mayo have regrouped and have come back very strong. Derry are looked upon as one of the strong teams in it. So whoever wins that, Kildare play in the final. I think that final is fixed for the following weekend.
Yeah.
But as you guys, tomorrow it's a run out for Kildare. They'll probably be still strong enough to win it, and it's a great opportunity to have another look at the lads that are not the first 15 or 18 on the squad.
Yeah, throwing in at 12 o'clock tomorrow. Updates with Seamus Dillon on KFM, but here is the manager, David Herity.
Two things to work on now again this week, ahead of the Sligo game, which should be a fair old battle now next week. It is heading into that final game now and trying to get to Croke Park on the five-win streak. That's what you really want to bring that bit of momentum in. So next weekend now will be a great chance for everyone to go back at it again and try and right the wrongs from today.
Yeah, and Tommy, just before we finish up as well, we'll hear from the Kildare ladies manager, Sean Finnegan, and also the Camogie manager, Joe Quaid. Both of those teams are in respective Leinster finals as well. Kildare footballers against Wexford and the Kildare Camogie side against Meath. A great achievement by both the teams.
Absolutely. The ladies
have
been big win over Offaly last time out, and manager Sean Finnegan has done a marvellous job with this team. It's effectively a fairly big change from the squad from last year. A lot of Gareth left various different reasons. John came in, a man of experience, and he seems to have molded the team very well together. From the Camogie point of view, they seem to have done very well to reach this far. I saw them earlier on against Cork and in the league, and they were poor enough that day. But again, Joe Craig seems to have worked his oracle again. So I mean, it's great achievement as you said at the top of the programme there, to have so many Kildare teams in action. Look, ladies, Camogie, two Leinster finals, under 20 footballers, 24 and All Ireland final. You know, Leinster senior footballers. The Miners had a great win, and they're in the Leinster final next week. So it's an incredible time for Kildare GAA at the minute, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. Let's hear then from the ladies manager, Sean Finnegan. The team, obviously, they're unbeaten in the Leinster Championship. They faced Wexford earlier on in the league and also in the Championship, and they've won on both occasions. And here's what he had to say.
And we'll plot and plan like we do for every single game. We'll watch videos, we'll meet with the team before training on Wednesday. We will lay down how we're going to play it. It's a very set protocol now that we adhere to all the time. We're looking forward to the Leinster final next week.
Yeah, the Camogie side, they face Meath in the Leinster final after beating Dublin in the semi-final last week. The manager is Joe Quaid.
Hopefully we can drive on from that. Look, we're in a final now next week, and while finals are nice to be in, I know that myself from losing to All Ireland, they're a nice place to be going into it, but when you're there, they're there to be won, and that's what we'll be aiming to do.
And we'll have updates of both of those games as well across the weekend here on KFM. So as Tommy said, a massive, massive weekend for Kildare teams. The under 20 footballers in the All-Ireland final tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock. The senior footballers, they play Westmeath in the Leinster semi-final at 2:15 on Sunday. The hurling team, they're playing Sligo in the Christy Ring Cup, having already advanced to the final. That's at 12 o'clock tomorrow. The Kildare ladies footballers, they're in the Leinster Championship final against Wexford, and the Kildare Camogie side, they're in the Leinster final against Meath.